This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started here. I believe we have quorum. Let me do the count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yep, looks like we will have quorum. So John, I'm going to ask you to call the roll.
Mariah Adege.
Here.
Salima Ali.
Here.
Joseph Anderson.
Here.
Morgan Baker. Colin Benedict.
Here.
Ira McCass. Uchenna Chukwukere.
Here.
John Clancy.
Here.
Osai Garvba. Jacob Fite.
Here.
Massa Haddad. Catherine Huang.
Here.
Julian Kroll. Yifan Li. Gavin Martin. Nick Matulka.
Here.
Indigo Pavlov. Tomas Reuning.
Here.
Lucas Smith.
Here.
Polina Solovieva. Sarah Sun.
Here.
Noah Watson.
Here.
Brian Weintraub. Kiribel Wandimu. Celine Xu. Valentina Xu. Jacob Youngblood. Johan Yuan.
Here.
Great. We'll move on to approval of the minutes. The first set of minutes we need to approve are from February 6th. If people can take a time, if you've already looked at it, if you've heard a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Thank you. Is there a second? There's been a second. All in favor, use the check boxes. Against, and if you're abstaining, just message me privately, please. Thank you. By a vote of 13-0-1, the minutes have been approved. We'll be moving on to the February 20th minutes. If people can take a look at those, and please make motions as necessary.
Motion to approve.
Second. There's been a motion to approve. There's been a second. All in favor, please put in the boxes, check box. By a vote of 14-0-1, these minutes have been approved. We'll be now moving on to open microphones. Catherine? It's open microphone.
Sorry, I stepped away from my camera. moving into open microphone. If everyone, anyone from the community wishes to speak, please speak up. Okay, I'm going to close open microphone.
Okay, we'll be moving on to business of the day. Before we do that, we have a couple motion to move amendments around the agenda. The first motion I would like is a motion to reconsider a resolution from the past that Debbie and I wrote to make the SAT-ACT test optional. We're asking the assembly to reconsider that through via an email vote tomorrow. So what Debbie, and as many of you know, Cornell has changed their SAT-ACT requirements for the upcoming application cycle in the wake of COVID-19. This has changed the content of our resolution slightly. And so we're asking the assembly to reconsider that resolution. So Debbie and I can make amendments and we can vote for it via email. Essentially, the amendments that we would make would be to allow the period of test optional to be extended. And if that is not possible, we're asking the university to be able to release public data about how many people did, you know, send in SAT, ACT, and what effect that might have on our school's diversity of incoming class. So those would be amendments that Debbie and I are going to be adding, and we'll send the resolution out back to the membership. Jacob? Yeah.
And I believe, you know, personally, I think it's important that we have the demographics of those who submit and don't submit. So will that be provided?
Yeah, Debbie and I are going to make sure that the resolution spells out what we want publicly provided. But is there a second to my motion to reconsider?
Second.
Thank you. Looks like we'll move into voting on the motion. All in favor, all against, and all abstaining. Abstaining, message me privately. By a vote of 16-0-1, this resolution be reconsidered. Debbie and I will send out an updated version as soon as possible. Next, since we have our guest for the one resolution and has been, so we have a motion to amend the agenda based off of guests who are and are not present and who needs to leave early. So I'm going to ask the assembly to consider resolution 65 first. Because one of the sponsors needs to leave early and some of the sponsors for resolution 62 are not present. So I'll ask 65 to be considered first by the assembly. So is there a second to that?
Second.
Thank you. Any dissent to it? Hearing no dissent, we'll move on to resolution 65. So sponsors, whoever wants to take it away first, please go for it.
Okay, I can start. So I just want to start by thanking you all for voting to found the Office of the Student Advocate earlier this year in the fall. In just two semesters, the OSA has grown so much, and as I hope you've seen, has been able to accomplish a lot to help students navigate Cornell and hear out all of their concerns. The work that we've been doing this year has given us a lot of insight into what works and what doesn't work in terms of campus policy. So we've seen a lot of cases that stem from inequity ingrained in university policy. Joe, you are laughing and you are not muted.
That wasn't me.
Oh, someone is laughing and is not muted. Sorry if I'm being wrong. So, okay, continuing. We've seen a lot of cases that stem from inequity ingrained in university policy. Students are suffering because of financial aid, with mental health services, and also with the disciplinary process. The OSA team is working hard to review the university policies that exist, especially in relation to our casework. And we've been meeting with a lot of administrators to educate ourselves further and so that we can be prepared to recommend areas of improvement. So some of the areas of improvement that we recommend in this resolution are adding more of a student voice to the disciplinary process for code of conduct violations, and also ensuring restorative justice approaches for misconduct that doesn't rise to a certain level of concern. So like an example of that would be if someone gets caught lighting birthday candles in the dorms, that would be like an example of something that doesn't rise to a certain level of conduct. We've also found a massive gap and a need for increased diversity and inclusion trainings for faculty, staff, and students who are involved in the disciplinary hearing process. And we also have found a need for more student discretion over who represents and advocates for students in that process. So within the document, which I know is long, you will find comparisons to similar policies that have been successful at our peer institutions like UPenn, Brown, Columbia, Dartmouth, UVA, the University of Michigan, and more. And many of the recommendations we're making are pretty straightforward, and they come directly what we've heard from the student body through our casework. Our casework only from this one semester and some from last semester, and research has been very extensive and has clarified for us that these small legislative steps could have a huge impact on making the students at Cornell more equitable. So I really hope that you all support it.
Okay, thanks. I'll be taking a speakers list. Do the raise hand thing in the function. Jacob Feit.
Yes, so I looked over the resolution. Can you just outline, just for clarity for all my my colleagues, just the key points that you guys are recommending be changed and altered, and specifically, you know, what you see will stem from this. I am very much in favor of the bill.
Absolutely. So there are three main points. One is adding the student voice more to the disciplinary process. So what you'll find throughout the resolution is increased places for student involvement within the disciplinary process, and making decisions for that process, and also clauses that include restorative justice approaches for misconduct. That's probably the second biggest point. And the third biggest point is including diversity and inclusion trainings in the procedures for disciplinary processes.
Sounds good.
Great. Anyone else on the speakers list? John Clancy.
Hello. I was just wondering if you could elaborate more on like how this would affect, like, currently Box is not letting me in, right? But in terms of like individual dorms, because I know like for the disciplinary process for some, for some offenses, like, it doesn't always go for like the peer review committee. Sometimes it's more of RHDs making decisions, depending on like the offense. So could you elaborate how this would like the restorative justice like institutionally would be put into these sort of situations?
Absolutely. So if they're going to the RHDs and they don't rise to the level of going to the hearing board, then they wouldn't be affected by these restorative justice approaches. But if they do rise to the level of going to the university hearing board, then there would be an opportunity for restorative justice instead of the more stringent disciplinary hearings. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Great.
Anyone else on the speakers list? Jacob Feit again.
Does Gavin want to go first, actually? I just saw he is.
Yeah, I'll give it to Gavin.
Thanks. It's not so much a question as I just wanted to give a shout out to Liel. Liel, I know the Office of the Student Advocate. Y'all do a lot of work, and I'm just very thankful for you putting this together.
That's so nice of you to say things, Gavin.
Of course.
Jacob Feit.
Yeah, so I was just curious. So what is the threshold level in terms of what goes to the hearing and review board from your perspectives of what the resolution is going to outline? I mean, I think that there's a significant gray area, and I think that it differs depending on, you know, the residential advisors in the building. I think that they will see it differently if there's not some sort of rigid threshold. But by the same token, I feel that a rigid threshold actually has the ability to inadvertently discriminate against some students. So what is your take on how you can make that, you know, as equitable as possible in terms of a threshold?
So I think that that's a really great question. I think what's important to highlight is that the university can't force anyone to come forth as a complainant in these cases. So if you know, a student is caught doing something in their dorm and they prefer to bring it to the RHD for adjudication rather than bringing it to a disciplinary committee, that's within their right to do, unless it's a certain kind of offense, I believe, but someone else can correct me. So I don't think that there's much room for restrictions in that regard, just considering the fact that like you really can't force a complainant to come forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I think, you know, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else on the speakers list? A motion to vote on this if there is no one else on the speakers list.
Motion.
There's been a motion to vote. Is there a second? There's been a second. All in favor, click yes. All opposed, click no. Any abstain, please message me privately.
Wait, how do you find the click thing? Sorry.
Go to the participants chat tab.
Oh, got you. Okay, I found it. Thank you.
Alina, are you voting on this or abstaining?
Hello. Hello.
We'll get her when she comes back, and she might have stepped away. But as it stands right now, the vote is 16-0-1, so this resolution passes. Thank you, Leo and OSA.
Thank you, guys.
Perfect. Oh, actually, can I ask for you? Can I actually motion for unanimous approval of the resolution? I just think it's important for like posturing and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it is unanimous as it be Polina to vote. So we could wait for Polina and we could get it.
Okay. I will.
Okay.
I'll. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll text her.
Okay. Thank you. But as it stands right now, if she abstains, it will be okay. Because it would still be unanimous just because the way we count abstentions. So we'll be moving on to another resolution. The other sponsor of Resolution 62, he's not here. He'll join at 5:15, he said. So we'll move to Resolution 63, increasing the grace period on Cornell University loans. I'll ask Kat to chair this part because this is my resolution. So I will quickly introduce it for everyone. It's not super complex. This resolution seeks, so currently as it stands as part of a financial aid package for Cornell, you can be offered a private loan from Cornell University itself. Thank you. Polina added a yes. So it's 17-0-1 on that last resolution, John. So as it stands right now, Cornell can give out a private loan from the institution to you as part of a financial aid package. This loan, I believe, has a 6% interest rate, and it does not accrue any interest, nor does it have a payment, any necessary payments while you're at the institution. And also, it does not accrue interest or require payments after graduation from the institution. So for students graduating this year, the first payment would have to be on January 1, 2021. And in result of the COVID-19 pandemic, I think that this payment period should be extended by another 6 months, or if the university is not willing to make it a universal policy to extend all the payment payments by 6 months, have a petition available to students who could petition to lengthen that grace period because of potential job loss or anything else that students might be experiencing. So that's the resolution.
Cool. Thanks, Joe. I'll not be taking a speakers list. Please raise your hand if you want to speak. Okay, Debbie?
Are these the Schumacher loans, Joe?
Yeah, they're the Schumacher loans.
Okay. That's my question.
Cool. Anyone else? Is there a motion to vote?
Motion to vote.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, please use the chat. Awesome. 16-0-1. It passes.
Perfect. Did you get Gavin's vote count on that? Gavin put it in the chat.
Oh, great. There we go. Yes.
Oh. 17. Okay. We'll be moving on to resolution 64, amendments to class councils and senior days governing documents. That is Mariah.
Yes. So we in APSCOM on Monday, we had a request from class councils and senior days for a change in their governing docs, where they would just be combining, like senior days would just be combined with class councils, and they kind of already are doing that. But they do apply as two separate byline orgs, and they have like every byline cycle up until this point. But they wanted to like officially be one org, so it would still be called class councils, but senior days would be officially part of the class councils organization instead of like technically a separate org, but basically like functioning with the same people. I had in the resolution that funding wise, this change wouldn't take effect until the next byline cycle, but like organizationally, they can still function as one org. I don't know if people have thoughts on that. I'm willing to change it. I personally don't have an issue with them combining their budgets like effective immediately, but I do think it sets a little bit of a weird precedent to say that any org that combines can just pull their budgets like in the middle of a byline cycle. So I don't know what people's thoughts are. I didn't resident it was setting, but I also don't have any like actual issue with them combining their budgets. It was more so just like a precedent setting thing. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Because they already operate pretty much as one org, nothing is really changing other than like on paper them being together. And then the funding issue was the only thing that came up during APSCOM, and kind of just my own thoughts.
Sarah Sun. Start with the speakers list.
So like, in what ways could this precedent be abused in like future, like kind of concerns?
Yeah, so my thought was just like in general, if there are in the future orgs that want, like orgs that we might not even know of right now that would be on byline in the future, who then like apply as like two separate orgs as class councils and senior days have, and then, you know, do this constitution change and then combine and pull their budgets for things that maybe the committee was not, like, did not foresee. I guess the thing is just that, like, my thought is that when we approve them, when they applied, they were two separate orgs. And so, like, kind of setting that precedent of, like, oh, you can just combine and pull your budgets, like, whenever you want, I felt like was kind of, like, an abuse of the byline system. But I also, yeah, I'm open to thoughts. I don't know if that is, but in my mind, it kind of seemed like we can just kind of like join together when we want. And then like, if things don't work out, we'll just like reverse our constitution change, and then we'll go back to like having a split budget.
I guess I'm just wondering, like, in like, what would that look like? Like, what actual issues do you think would arise like as a result of that happening? Like, I guess I just don't, I guess I like, I'm curious as to like how that would be a in what ways it could potentially be a negative thing.
Mariah, I can actually answer this or like just try and help just because I'm on appropriations too, if you don't mind. Okay. So I think that this comes up when orgs are similar in nature and then end up combining budgets, and they also do meetings together, and then they end up becoming one org with two budgets for similar things. And we also see this under SAFC orgs. So I think the concern that Mariah is bringing up is that like this could also be under byline orgs, which have like bigger budgets than the SAFC funded orgs.
Yeah, I guess the negative isn't so much that like they're using a combined pool of money, which is why I was saying in the beginning, like, I don't have an issue with the fact that they would be sharing their money. I think it's more so just like the thought that we, like, while we approved budgets for like these 30 orgs, and then kind of like orgs at any time they want can just like combine and pool their money. Like, and even though I'm not saying that they would be doing anything wrong with the money, but I guess, yeah, kind of going to Gavin's point of just like kind of pooling those resources and then just being like, oh yeah, we kind of just like do the same thing and now we have double the money. And like, and I guess kind of like for not democracy's sake, but kind of just like for fairness, I feel like because everyone is paying for this and we do approve things on a 2-year cycle, like people, like what we approved was for these 30 orgs, not 30 orgs that, or like two orgs that then bind into one. But also like, I don't know if people do have like a serious issue with that. It was kind of just my, like my, yeah, just some thoughts.
I think your resolution's good.
Oh, no worries, Sarah. Anyone else for the speakers list?
Motion to vote.
There's been a motion to vote. Is there a second? There's been a second. Who was the second?
Me.
Perfect. Thank you, Valentina. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, all in favor, all opposed, all abstaining. By a vote of 16-0-1, this resolution passes. And lastly, we'll move on to resolution 62, establishment of the student with disabilities representative at large. So Conan is here, and Conan can start us off. And Uche is also a co-sponsor with myself. So Kat, if you can share this portion. And then just an FYI for the group, this would be a charter change. And so it can't be voted on this meeting, but we want to get through the substantive discussion this meeting, just have the vote for next meeting. So, Conan, if you want to kick it off.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Joe. Sorry I'm late to this meeting, by the way. So I reached out to Joe to propose to submit this resolution because I have been doing my best to fulfill the role in an ex officio position for the past year now, I believe. However, I believe that given that the student body is, that around 8% of the student body has a disability, there is no way that a single organization like CUDA could appoint a representative that would actually be able to represent the entire demographic, no matter how well, again, how it is, it's not possible for one organization of really any size, I believe, to represent an entire group well, of this size, I mean. So I believe that making it an elected position will allow the disability community and the Cornell community at large to have a much greater say and to achieve better representation for all students with disabilities on this campus. And that's basically my primary motivation for this. CUDA has done a good job, I believe. And CUDA would do a good job of appointing a representative, but I believe that they get a more broadly based democratic process would do an even better job of ensuring complete the best form of representation possible for students with disabilities. That's my pitch, basically.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Conan. Uche, as the co-sponsor, would you like to say anything else, or should we move to the speakers list?
Conan pretty much hit it right on the nail. I think overall, it's really important that as an assembly, we're always trying to make sure that we're making the assembly a more equitable space for others, making sure that we're always increasing accessibility and representation for, you know, all kinds of different demographics and marginalized groups on campus. So,
awesome. Thank you, Uche. I'll now be taking a speakers list. Please use the participants buttons. I have Valentina. Go ahead.
So thank you guys for working on this resolution. I guess one thing I was just thinking is during like a normal election cycle, would there be anything in place to I guess, help the candidates who are running for this position in terms of, like, you know, if they're trying to distribute, like, you know, like flyers around school, like things like that. I can, like, see how they wouldn't be on kind of like the same level ground as, like, people, you know, who are, I don't know how to say this, but, and yeah, but I think what I'm trying to say is, like, how can we ensure, I guess, to, like, help them, it's, like, on the same equal ground as everyone else campaigning, if that makes sense.
Well, they would only be campaigning for this specific position, and I think also it's, to be perfectly frank, given we don't know what any given candidate will be. Are you talking about, like, if they have a disability which could affect their ability to campaign? To be perfectly frank, I don't, there is nothing that we could figure out here that that individual hasn't already thought of in their 18 years of life before Cornell. I believe that you make a very good point. There should be something probably from the elections committee to ensure fairness and to offer adequate accommodations. However, given there is nothing that we could figure out now as a policy that would really be useful, that would really be useful without knowing what the future individual needs. I think if there is, to be blunt, and if there is an issue with the elections process with that would preclude an individual with a disability from running any disability, then to me that's not necessarily something that should be fixed by this position. It's something that should be fixed with the elections process, because a student with a disability could run for any position. So if needed, that should be done on a essay-wide level, not on a position level. Although I think, obviously, I understand your point, though, but I hope I've answered it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, like, all good intentions behind that question. I was just more thinking about, like, you know, like, is the least that we can do for that position is to, like, maybe set something in place, like, you don't distribute physical flyers, because if you're, like,
I would say that that position should be campaigned for and run on the same level as any other position. And because to do otherwise would create an imbalance and create a difference, and that is antithetical to the idea of equitable representation. I understand the point. My counter argument would be if there's anything special done for this position, it should be done for every position, because a candidate for this position with a disability might very well run for any other position, and limiting an individual to running for disability rep because they have a disability doesn't seem like it comports with our values. If we should make elections more accessible to people with disabilities, I agree, to vote and to run. But it shouldn't just be the disability position. It should be every position is equally easy or difficult to run for every student, be they disabled, male, female, whatever. Every position should be the same with respect to, can I run for it? Do I want to run for it? That's a different matter.
No, I definitely agree. I think that this just might be something we will have to think more just holistically. Like, I agree. I think it should be every position. I think you made a really good point there.
Well, you raised an important question, and I thank you for raising it, because it's an important question that isn't thought of enough, I'm afraid. So thank you.
Thank you.
Great. thanks to both of you. Moving on with our speakers list, we have Johan.
Hi. Thank you all for working on this resolution. I guess I have two questions. So first one, since it's an at-large position, and at the beginning of the semester, we do pass a resolution of reducing the number of signatures for some specific at-large positions. Will that resolution also be applied to this particular position if the resolution get passed? And my second question would be, because we know we don't have election right now, but if everything goes to normal, will we have a campaign for this position during fall, or it's going to be during spring?
I regretfully am not familiar with the technicalities of SA elections, if Joe or Uche could speak to that. But one thing, I will reiterate my previous point that this position would be considered on the same basis of as every other at-large position. And so with that in mind, that's how I would like to see it treated with respect to the rule concerning signatures. And I hope, Joe or Uche, do you have anything more to add to that?
Yeah, I can add to it. So to answer the first question, the positions that were reduced from 150 to 75 were the identity-based at-large positions, if I can remember correctly. This would fit in with that kind of cluster of at-large positions in the sense, and so it would be 75. We can, at our next meeting, add an amendment to make that even more clear, but that is the intention of this resolution. And your second question, yes, this would be part of the special election held. So it wouldn't be part of what was supposed to be the cluster of spring elections. It would be held with the cluster for transfer rep and any other position that was not filled through the spring, now first 2 weeks of fall election. So that would be what would happen. Obviously, that is still contingent upon us getting a director of elections for the fall, which the executive committee will be working on at our next Tuesday meeting to create a publicity plan so the assembly can have that person in place by our last meeting of the semester.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe. I hope that answers your question, Johan. Next on the speakers list, we have Liel.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to both of you for drafting this resolution. I think it's really great and striving to make the assembly more equitable. And I also just wanted to express, just regarding the exchange between Conan and Valentina, that I do think it's really important that we look at the election process and making all positions accommodated and as equitable as possible.
Thanks, Liel. Next, we have Mariah.
Yeah, I actually was kind of just going to say something similar to Liel. Just thank you both for doing this. I think that this is great and making strides towards having the SA be a lot more equitable and a lot more representative of the student body. So I definitely thank you both for doing all of this.
Thanks, Mariah. We have no one left on the speakers list at the moment.
Motion to vote.
We can't vote, I think.
Motion to table.
Motion to table, yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Conan.
My pleasure.
Okay. Use the little buttons to vote to table. Awesome. 16-0-1.
17. Yeah, I'm putting it in the chat.
There we go.
So that's all of the business. I have one more motion. Since we added a week of classes due to the virtual exchange, that means we need to have a formal motion to add another meeting to the student assembly. Just to put it on the slot doesn't mean we will have it, just potentially if there is business. So I'm going to motion to add a meeting on Thursday, May 7th from 4:45 to 6, our standard meeting time. There's second.
Second.
Thank you. So all in favor, please vote. All against, please vote. Abstain, let me know. by a vote of 16-1-1, this motion passes. So there will be a meeting scheduled for May 7th. And that is it for this meeting. So is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Perfect. Second. All in favor? It passes. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for a great meeting. And we'll see you back next Thursday. Bye-bye.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.